So, guys, who's feeling slightly sexually menaced by our topic this week?
Sexually menaced?
Like, if you watch the entire Alien, you know, oeuvre in like a block like I have, I gotta tell you, I really don't want anything going inside or out of my body. It really changed, like, American Gods, everything. It's, I feel sexually menaced.
Yeah, but there's not as much butt stuff in Alien movies.
There is not enough butt stuff.
So, I don't feel oppressed. I don't know what the good word is for that.
It's just because butt burster is like so funny as a phrase. You can't introduce that to a horror action franchise.
So there's been chest bursters and we think back bursters, but no, like we don't count Namir Pace's like quasi abortion in Prometheus as any other kind of burster, right?
Nothing. It's more of an abdomen burster.
I think we could, but nothing's coming out of the butt, I think, is what we've discovered.
Well, no, I was trying to think of, like, any other orifice. Anyway, yeah.
It's called xenodiarrhea.
No, but how did we get here so quickly is my question. yeah. Alien.
This week, on the finale of the Storm of Spoilers off-season tour, we're off into space, mostly, to discuss the Alien film franchise and how it's evolved over 7 films. That's Alien through Prometheus for segment 1, then we'll dive into the nitty-gritty Alien Covenant spoilers. If you want to be unspoiled for Covenant, jump ship for the last part of this podcast, but believe me, you'll want to return after you've seen it. Remember, out here, no one can hear you scream. Welcome to the Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my favorite Alien movie that isn't Alien, obviously, is actually probably Prometheus. Sorry, guys.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and my favorite Aliens movie that isn't actually Alien is Alien 3, because it's got someone from Game of Thrones and someone who played a doctor in Doctor Who. So what more could you ask for, really?
And I'm Neil Miller. And my favorite non-alien aliens movie is Alien Resurrection, because I will stan for Jean-Pierre Jeunet till I die. The man is a genius, period.
We're going to have some fun discussions this week about the Alien franchise leading into a second half, which we will eject Joanna out the airlock for her fear of spoilers.
Because whoa, that got dark.
Neil has seen Alien Covenant, and he's going to share with me and those of you that wish to listen to it, you know, early, what to expect going in to the newest installment from Ridley Scott into this winding, odd franchise. But first, Joanna, do we have any reviews this week?
Gosh, we do. We have a lot of reviews. Thank you guys so much for leaving all of your reviews here. I'm just going to read this one from JustAFreak24. Stop reading, start listening. 5 stars. And Just Freak 24 said, I'm not the type to leave reviews, but after the ums and uhs incident passed by like a badly polygon Sansa withholding tactical info on her wedding night, I decided to channel the social justice warrior within and drag my soapbox to the harbor, where I eagerly await a giant mockingbird that will whisk me away to the Citadel of Crazy. And if none of that makes much sense, get ready for a backlog of the finest in podcasting with 3 charismatic hosts full of insight into whatever topic they choose to explore. Dave, whose knowledge of all things pop culture has made him a venerable authority that could only be improved by more Rick and Morty quotes. Neil Miller, the man I would most gladly meet over Dornish wine so we can speak of our boy Oberyn and what could have been. And finally, Joanna, a.k.a. Rojo. From your days recording The Ones Who Knock, I have followed your audio work and been rewarded with so many favorite podcasts that I feel like I owe you my most heartfelt of gratitude. As soon as the Twin Peaks retrospective was championed, I practically cheered. Don't let the haters get you down. You're amazing. Keep up the great work. So thanks, Just a Freak. I thought it was a little bit more me positive than I meant. I saw that they... Anyway, I just couldn't, like, pass by...
It was very thorough, and I liked
it. I couldn't pass by badly polygon Sansa with holding Tattoo Limpo on her wedding night.
That would literally kill Dave.
It like, would.
It's all of our least favorite things. So, yeah. There you go.
Nice.
I also like what I discovered... while watching Twin Peaks, this is off subject, but it was mentioned in the review, so I feel like that off subject is there's a way to structure willful withholding of information that doesn't piss me off. Let's hope that comes into play in some of our dramas in the future.
Oh, and this is a shameless self-plug, but the Twin Peaks retrospective mention was this podcast, Peaks TV, which I'm doing with friend of the pod, Dave Chen. You can go to peakstv.com for all the information.
You could also leave them 5-star reviews and say anything on my authority. but you should also do that for us over at Storm of Spoilers on your iTunes device. So now we have a new little section in the podcast. Since we're going back into Game of Thrones land, we don't need to check in with them every week. This week, we're going to check up with Joanna Robinson's Evolving Smile. Joanna, I hear you've joined some sort of club.
This is definitely the weirdest thing we've ever done, guys. This is exciting, though. I'm really excited for this.
I can't wait to see how this goes down.
I've joined something called Smile Direct Club. And basically, it's this great service where if you're feeling a little insecure about your smile and you want it a little brighter or a little, you know, everything a little bit more in place, then you can sign up with Smile Direct Club, and they send you these spacers and some things to make your teeth a little brighter. And it's a long process, but it's actually a really easy process. I've already started it. So that means I got to take this silly putty goo stuff and make my own sort of dental impression at home, and also take really, really freaky looking photos of my back teeth. So you're welcome, internet. You will never see them. And
let's never say never here. I feel like that's potential future bet material.
And I sent them off, but no one wants to see my back molars. I just sent them off to Smile.
I feel
Direct.
Like now you're just challenging our listenership.
No, well, listen, I will be very honest with you. When I got the kit, I was a little daunted. I was a little worried. I was like, can I do this? I am notoriously clumsy and bad at following directions. I'm a stereotype from a rom-com. Like, can I actually make this happen? But it was actually very easy. I did not glue my mouth shut. And, you know, they are sending me my personalized, based on my smile, impressions kit so that I can get to work making my teeth a little bit better than they were before.
So you guys have been so nice about taking our survey. We have, as you can tell, a fabulous ad partner that's going to make Joanna's life better. Here's how I need to make your life more difficult. I need to tell you three things. Thing number one, Smile Direct Club aligners are already affordable. They're 70% less than other brands or braces, but you could save even more with insurance or FSA. Many dental insurance plans reimburse customers for a portion of the cost of the invisible aligners, and Smile Direct Club accepts FSAs. Two, there are two easy ways to pay. Ooh, two things in number two. That seems kind of bad. Single pay is a single payment of $1,700, lab costs waived. Other invisible aligners brands can cost up to $5,000 on average. Or you can take advantage of Smile Pay. It's only $250 down plus $99 a month for 17 months for a total of $1,933. No check, no credit check is required. I'm sure there will be a check required. That seems like that's going to be important. Number three, you could get started with an at-home impression for only $95. It's covered by their Smile Guarantee. So if their aligners aren't a good fit for you, you get your money back. With this special offer, you could save 50% of the evaluation cost.
I have two questions.
Okay, go.
Two questions. One, is there anywhere that I can't get Smile Direct?
You know, if you're one of our listeners in North Carolina, you cannot get Smile Direct.
Tough break.
Yeah.
My second question is, does it actually work? Which I mean, believe we're going to spend
We're
going to
find out, because we're going to be checking in, I believe, every other month or something like that on me.
Because I'm not saying that I'm out there looking for a soulmate, but I might be.
Well, what's really fun is I sent my impressions back, and then, you know, they send you a little alert, and you go to the website, and you can see It's sort of like in the movies when someone goes to the plastic surgeon's office and they show you, like, what this thing could look like. They sort of show you a time-lapse thing of how your teeth could move to a more delightful smile. So there you go.
So if you guys want to maybe give this a try along with Joanna and keep checking in, you could save 50% off the cost of Smile Direct Club's at-home impression kit by visiting smiledirectclub.com and using the promo code STORM at checkout. SmileDirectClub.com, promo code STORM at checkout. Do it today.
Love that promo code. It's the best one.
Guys, you've woken up in deep space after long dreams of us trying to sell you stuff to a future where your ship, your cargo ship, has picked up a distress signal from an odd planet because you are in the plot of Ridley Scott's first Alien movie, which is the best Alien movie.
Wait,
right?
Couldn't you also be in the plot of like three other Alien movies?
I mean, specifically, maybe, yes.
It's always a distress signal. Never respond to a distress signal, is what I'm saying.
I see. I feel like I was trying to start with a chronological movement, but maybe we should start with what classifies like this franchise, considering the Alien versus Predator movies are sort of technically Alien movies, and Prometheus is technically an Alien movie, despite not having Alien the title. For, let's say, Joanna, who has not seen Covenant, what makes an Alien movie for you?
I mean, the H.R. Giger design, you're right. What we see in the first, the non-Predator movies, I can't speak to them because I haven't seen them, are these directors sort of exploring different genres. So you've got horror, or you've got James Cameron doing, classic action, or you've got David Fincher doing sort of creepy claustrophobic suspense, or you've got Jean-Pierre Jeunet doing whatever the hell he ever does. And it's not a knock on him. It's just whatever the hell he ever does is the genre. So it's them like taking Alien and sort of riffing on it, right? Which is Dave's point. So like when you strip that all away, what defines an Alien movie? As much as I hate this phrase, I think you have to go with strong female protagonist. And in the Giger design, I think is just really important. And then,
is it Giger or Geiger?
It's Giger.
Is it now?
It really
I've
is.
Been saying it wrong for a long time.
I was saying it really wrong until I watched those Alien documentaries we were talking about last year, and I was like, "What the fuck are these people saying, Giger?" And then I looked it up. I was like, "Ooh, it's Giger."
I was alternating until I heard the Super Ego podcast, which has a hilarious series of impressions of Giger. And now I could just only hear him saying his own name in my head for, hey, really, Giger.
Giger is so freaking weird. He's such a weirdo. If you watch those Alien documentaries, which we talked about, which are all on YouTube, or Dave mentioned one of them, or was it a listener who told us that the extended version of the Alien 3 documentary is not on YouTube?
Yeah. No, that was totally me. But I do listen to this podcast, so you're accurate.
Okay.
Technically still true.
So, yeah, there's some stuff with Giger, and you're like, man, this guy is super weird and fucked up. And so that mentality, which is Dave alluded to sort of way back at the beginning of this podcast before he tried to sell you stuff, is this sort of psychosexual invasive situation. Oh, the last thing that I would say defines an Alien movie, and then I will shut up, is AI gone wrong, right? Artificial intelligence, the creeping dread of artificial intelligence and its allegiance to humanity versus its allegiance to whatever else may come down the pike. So,
excellent. Neil, do you have any disputes with anything Joanna said?
No. As per usual, Joanna makes several salient points. I think that there are some new things that define Alien that we've learned in the more recent films, which this doesn't spoil Covenant in any way, but it's all, I think Prometheus showed us that the franchise is sort of an exploration of creation, an origin of all creation, or the search, the answering the big questions, where did it all come from? So I think it's there are a lot of interesting scientific questions that have been raised in the, I guess, the latter six. Well, I don't know. maybe not Alien versus Predator or its sequel.
The new Ridley Scott era?
The new Ridley Scott era is all about questions and also some like science versus faith stuff. But, you know, the essential elements I've always thought of when I thought of the Alien franchise is sort of the unpredictability of nature question, which is like, you know, we don't know what we're going to find when we go out into space. We could find something absolutely terrible. And claustrophobia and death and scary stuff. Those are all things that happen in the Alien movies.
I would say in the new Ridley Scott era, you also have the, you know, I haven't seen Covenant, but I've read some reviews of Covenant. And I would say scientists doing stupid things is... But that goes back to horror, right? Horror is about people doing stupid things.
You know what? I actually had a discussion about that with my roommate who podded with me about Alien for later this week on One Perfect Pod. Plug. We actually were talking about just this notion of scientists being bad at stuff or not taking things scientifically, which is very true. But also... It took me a while to realize that the people in Prometheus don't know that they're in an alien movie, so they don't know what those things are. They don't know not to touch that stuff. They should be skeptical, like scientists. But if you remember that these people have no idea that they're in an alien movie, it makes it easier to understand how they could so easily be dispatched by nature.
I won't speak to Covenant, but there's that scene in Prometheus where it's like Rafe Spall and that other guy, right, who fully take their helmets off. And then just like something, it's the penis vagina creature thing that looks like, first looks like a penis and then looks like a vagina. And it's like pythoning penisly their faces. And they're still like leaning into it. I'm like, no, back away. Put your helmet back on. Like, back the fuck away from that thing. Why would you lean in closer? What's wrong with you? So, you know, just lacking basic sort of human survival instincts. It's not even like, oh, I'm in an alien movie, so this thing must want to burrow itself inside me and lay some eggs or something.
It's like, hey, you're a cute little guy, small snake-like creature moving quickly at me.
Oh, God. That scene made me so mad in Prometheus. Anyway, there's a lot about Prometheus I do like. I actually like that film better than some people do, but that scene bothered me. Dave, what did we miss about sort of what defines an alien movie?
So I think you guys have it all there, but there's a lot extra that we could kind of sweep away, because I have seen Alien vs. Predator and AVP Requiem, and they... establish some things that I think make a core alien film. So a core alien film is man through bureaucracy and hubris fucks up, a group of people pay the consequences through some sort of evolutionary horror. I think that covers all the movies. So an alien, obviously. Aliens 2, they, you know, decide to go, like, plant a fucking terraforming place. Alien 3, the company tries to harvest a queen from Ridley, but she crash lands on a prison planet. Alien Resurrection, obviously the genetic splicing, like, begins. Alien versus Predator is about the company drilling into an ancient pyramid they found that predators use to increase their evolutionary prowess by hunting aliens. AVP Requiem has a pred alien that was created by the results of the actions of humans in Alien versus Predator that then crash lands on Earth, and then they have to nuke an entire city. Prometheus, I feel, goes back to the more recognizable human hubris fucking up and then having an evolutionary horror. And I could only imagine that Covenant is the same, because I think that's the baseline for an alien movie. Everything else kind of comes and goes. I think that the AVP Requiem designs are far enough away from what Giger intended to be like their own other monster at that point. And AVP Requiem sort of treats them like their own other monster. But I feel like if you have those things, you have an alien movie, and luckily that like basic plot outline fits into like multiple genres, as we're seeing, even as we're bending back towards actual creatures. But I think those are the only things. Yeah, I think you could expand outside of those.
I was not aware that this was a quiz with correct answers, but I feel like you nailed it.
Well, that's my job, is to come in third and tell you guys you were wrong. You spent a good, 10 minutes with
but also
very
like,
well thought out opinions.
But also like monsters in space. So not always in space, but mostly
not always
in space.
Mostly in space. But I mean, Prometheus and Covenant and AVP Requiem and Alien vs. Predator are all planet-based movies for the most part. Alien 3 actually is too.
Yeah, that's a wood planet. It's not, but that was their original idea, right? Was to have a planet that was like all made of wooden structures.
I have an Alien 3 question because it's the one I've rewatched most recently.
Oh, okay.
As in like
which
a couple
cut?
Hours ago.
Which cut?
The special edition, thanks to a Twitter poll.
Ah, good.
It's not good. It's actually really bad. But
how
I feel like that's like a bold statement to start with.
It's a really terrible movie. I'm sorry.
How dare
There's
you?
Just no way.
I can't believe you're stumping for Resurrection and
that
trashing
movie,
Alien 3.
Here's all I need to say about this. And I'm hoping Dave will.
Did you rewatch
mildly back me up.
Resurrection recently?
No.
That's When's the last time you watched Resurrection?
It doesn't matter.
It does. When's the last time you watched Resurrection?
I don't know. A couple years ago.
Oh, yeah. And that's a terrible movie.
But anyway.
Oh, God.
So
you're both right and wrong about different things.
I have a statement and a question about Alien 3. One, here's how I know it's bad. That movie was released after The Abyss. But the visual effects of the alien, especially when it's like digital, are so bad. It looks like it was made in the 1960s.
Hey, Neil.
Yeah.
How many shots do you think the alien is digital in that movie?
Probably, I don't know, 10?
Two. It's
what?
A rod puppet.
I don't know how
okay,
you can't
so
smell
then
a
their
Dave
rod
Gonzalez
puppet sucks.
Trap by now.
Anyway.
He was baiting you. Okay, yeah.
Here's my question. What is the significance of a double Y chromosome? Because that they make a big deal out of it, it being like a double Y chromosome prison. I'm like, wait, that doesn't actually make any sense.
Oh, there's a name for that. I think it's called Klinefelter's syndrome. But the double Y chromosome does have like small genetic results. It, like people are born with an extra Y chromosome. They usually have like broader shoulders that lead down into like smaller waists. It's just, on a weird genetic level. But does it make sense in the alien world? I don't. I think it's one of those script remnants that got left over from an idea that isn't in that movie.
Interesting. Anyway, that's really all I had to say about
They're
alien
like the
3.
Most manly of the men is what they're trying to say, I think, is from what
a
I
genetic
guess.
Genetic mutation present in some males in the 22nd century, which gives the afflicted individual a predisposition for brutal antisocial behavior such as rape and murder. So basically, it's Ripley trapped with the patriarchy, is what we're saying.
Here comes the reading.
But can they help raping and murdering if it's genetic?
I don't want to talk about that.
See, I don't like that idea.
I think
that that's a choice.
I think one of the reasons that Alien 3 gets such a bad rap, right, is that it starts by killing off Newt and Hicks and, Bishop. And a lot of people were really attached to them, obviously, because Aliens was a very popular movie, and who doesn't love Michael Biehn? But I saw Aliens 2 like the same day I saw Alien 3, and which was last fall. So I had no emotional attachment to those characters. So I didn't care necessarily that they were killed off at the top of the movie at all. Sorry for all you Newt lovers out there. But I can understand that if like I had seen a movie and gone through an emotional journey and been like, oh, here's Ripley's new family. And she's like built this little unit out of this terror and horror that has befallen her. And like, oh my gosh, they're flying off into the future, blah, blah, blah. And the next movie starts. It's like, forget about them. New adventure. I mean, I would have been mad too, but I
remember those guys. They're dead now.
Didn't you think, I think Charles Dance is great in that movie.
I think Charles Dance is great. walking down the street. So yeah. That's not a fair question.
And then like Brian Glover is really good. Charles S. Dutton is good. My issue mostly is that they introduce Paul McGann as this character, Golic, this like absolute batshit thing, and then pretty much drop that character. That movie has problems. I'm not going to sit here and pretend it's the best Aliens movie. It's not. But like, I think it gets an unnecessarily bad rap. I like the concept of this like sort of claustrophobic prison planet. It reminds me a lot of the spaceship. And for some reason, I find the sort of spatial logistics and Aliens kind of hard to follow. Like, I don't have a sense of the space in Aliens, whereas an Alien in Alien 3, I do. Does that make sense? And so when you're trying to do a trapped and being chased by monsters or aliens, whatever you want to put it, it's good to have your ideas of space and limitations, you know?
It's interesting that you bring up space, not outside space.
Right, not outer space, but layout.
Because for me, that is really one of the defining features that makes me really enjoy the first film like that much more than, say, the more recent films. And actually, Alien 3, you're right about how it uses space, although I thought the way it's lit, it doesn't feel as confined as the way Ridley Scott lit the first one. But I think that's one of my problems with the newer movies, is that it's like this idea of like opening up this world to be like on planets and in different ships, and I miss the simplicity of it, of that original. The simplicity of being in a vacuum-sealed tube with a terrifying thing.
Well, did you miss the simplicity of the original but don't like Alien 3? So is it just the alien looks bad?
Or mostly it's because the alien looks bad and I think the story is stupid.
Isn't the most defining moment in the most defining image of the entire Alien franchise in Alien 3?
It's arguable.
Yeah, but you mean Ripley image? Yes, for sure.
Of the alien, but by her face?
Yeah.
Or her in the power lifter?
Her in the power lifter, I would say, is a very close second. But at least, maybe it's just because it's like such a powerful meme. Like the Ted Cruz campaign or something like that. I don't know. I feel like I see it used a lot. Maybe it's just because
I wonder what image comes up first if I just search Ellen Ripley.
That's probably like her holding Newt and the flamethrower.
I was going to say her with the cat.
Oh, that's good. But I think what makes the image in Alien 3
it's her holding Newt is the first one from an actual movie.
Dun-dun. I think the thing that Alien 3, that scene that makes it so powerful is never after that is Ripley less powerful than the alien. So as soon as the one thing is like the alien won't kill her, when she pops back up in Resurrection, it's the same sort of thing. So much so that when the newborn eventually like recognizes her, we realize that Ripley's like invincible superwoman. They kind of reinforce it with like a weird basketball thing, but what are you going to do? But Alien 3 does have that turning point where she stops being scared of the alien completely, which is interesting, especially since Aliens, it's like she has this fear, but she goes to try to save people and then eventually has to get out of there, you know, with the little girl who she has to save. But in terms of like finally having power over the literal devil in that movie, I think that's why that scene beats Power Loader scene, which is awesome, but it's like a let's have two moms fight sort of thing.
I think it's worth mentioning for those listening who haven't sort of gone deep or even scratched the surface of the alien sort of saga, that the character of Ripley was originally written as a man. And they cast it as a woman, and this sort of goes, you know, and it was sort of everyone who talks about it now, including Ridley Scott, is just sort of like, yeah, we just cast it as a woman. Like, we didn't care. It wasn't a big deal. Like, whatever. We just decided to do it. And, but I think it speaks to sort of like how now having a female lead in like an action movie just feels like such an oppressively big deal. And Ripley was groundbreaking and great, and Sigourney Weaver was relatively completely unknown, basically, and just came in and became this sort of icon, and you've got, like, Sarah Connor after her and all this other stuff, but I just feel like, and this is where, like, you know, younger feminists will probably yell at me, but I just feel like once upon a time, it just didn't feel like such an oppressively big deal to have women, you know, I would rather on both sides of the aisle, both, like, you know, yay feminism and Lady Ghostbusters. I kind of wish everyone would just sit down and be like, characters can be whatever they are. And then they're that, you know what I mean? Like, I think I'm showing my age a little bit, but
no, I get that. I think that, it would be nice. It's tough to go back and say, like, oh, it wasn't a big deal, because they all say that now, but was it a big deal to other people back then?
Yeah, that's a really
the
good point.
Question. But
maybe
I don't
the
think
the process of casting her wasn't a big deal, but, like, people watching it and feeling inspired, like, either storytellers who then put, you know, had the image of Ripley so that they can create, you know, other female action heroes in the future, or, you know, women in general, women who want to be astronauts or whatever it is, like seeing Ripley as an example. So it does matter. And
you know what it was?
Yeah.
It's that the media landscape has changed. And back then they didn't spend 24 hours a day picking apart every project as it was in production.
So true.
Well, but you know who did notice was James Cameron, because, like I was saying before, Aliens ends in a mom fight, and that wouldn't have happened with the male Ripley, which means maybe you don't get the iconic character of Aliens and the Queen that, you know, has thus far fucked up all the rest of the mythology, but in that movie works really, really well. I feel like I've helped Joanna defend Alien 3 a little bit. Joanna, do you remember what you don't like about Alien Resurrection?
There's a lot I do like. I guess I
wait
don't...
a way to pivot the question.
No. I'm gonna say things I don't like. I like the weirdness of Jean-Pierre Jeunet. I like the presence of Dominique Pignon, who is, like, one of Jean-Pierre Jeunet's favorite actors, who's just got the best face in the whole world. I guess I don't love the reveal of Winona Ryder's character, because it just seems like an unshocking, poorly kept reveal, or I don't know, maybe I just watched it too late. And so this big deal is made of something that I'm just sort of like, that feels unsurprising to me and not interesting. And then, as you say, you're talking about, you know, Ripley was never again, you know, weaker than the alien going forward sort of thing. But I like Ripley being a human character. And so for her to be this, like, scary... whatever she is in Resurrection, like, still kind of our hero, but also really menacing and super strong and creepy. I missed Ripley as just like a woman who is trying to endure all this shit, you know? So
I will say this as someone who, Mostly my like of this movie is attached to the director and defending him to, like, die. I do think I was, again, having a chat with my roommate about this. One of the interesting things about Resurrection is that it gets rid of one of the essential things that Dave was talking about, which is the company. I know that there is, like, obviously there's, like, the people that are cloning Ripley to recreate this whole situation, but to get sort of just detach it from the Weyland-Yutani Corporation sort of puts Ripley also in a different position, because she's no longer, like, sort of caught in the middle of this survival versus bureaucratic idiocy battle. So I find that to be interesting, and that is one place in which the Resurrection gets into some problems. It's also... I don't know. I always give it points for it's just sort of weirdness and ambitious weirdness. But, yeah, you know, that's not for everybody.
Well, no, but I like ambitious weirdness. But when you have, like, it's almost like not weird enough. Like, it's almost like I'd rather be watching The Fifth Element, and I'm not. And so I'm watching this instead, which is Lupin. It's a different director.
That's fair.
But like, but you know, it's like, it's Hemi weirdness. And then it's like, shackled to, it's, and I like the way that the first three films sort of riff on genre, but Resurrection almost feels either, it's caught between a complete departure and something that feels in step with whatever came before it. It's in this weird mid space. So I don't know.
I think that that mid space is going to be filled in the more Ridley Scott has to say about the Alien franchise, because rewatching Alien Resurrection, knowing what I do about Prometheus and Alien Covenant, I'm like, holy crap, this is the mirror movie to what Ridley Scott's now interested in this franchise, which is how do these different genetic pieces end up to each other. Here you have like this alien hybrid Ripley, this alien hybrid, or this Ripley hybrid queen that like gives birth to this like absolute monstrosity that has to be killed. And then you crash land like this weird bizarro Ripley on Earth, and we never check up with her again. So it's like, Ripley finally gets back to Earth, and she's brought back, like, everything that she spent the, you know, she died to keep away from the planet is actually, like, coexisting with her. I thought that was interesting when it happened, and time has not changed my perspective on that. Just in terms of, like, if you're going to make a fourth Alien movie and you could do anything, I think Joss Whedon's, like, pitch at a story and then filtered through weird French imagery. I think time is going to end up making me feel better about it than I did maybe initially, but I didn't feel bad about it when I saw it in theaters, for sure, because Alien 3 was a slog at that point, and there was no extended cut that made sense of it.
I mean, my relationship with the Alien franchise is definitely very weird, because I didn't watch Alien until, I don't know, I think I was in high school or maybe even college, and like some guy wanted to show it to me, and I was like, distracted. That was the most like shittily girly thing I could have ever said, but it's true. And so, and then I didn't watch it again until much later. And then, like I said, I didn't watch all the, well, I saw Prometheus in the theater, so I'm having seen any of the other films. And then I saw, All Arrest and rewatched Prometheus last fall. And you know, that's a really late time in life to in the pop culture to come to these things. It's you know, this is always the problem watching something that's so famous so long after it came out, because you know, you're like, well, I've seen that imitated a million times in other things already. Do you know? So
right. It's hard to see something, to have a bunch of people tell you something is one of the greatest movies of all time and then see it. Because there's that pressure of being like, this is amazing, this is amazing, this is amazing. And then you see it, and it's a movie from 1979, so it's not perfect.
Yeah, but I think I was Fighting in the War Room podcaster David Ehrlich at one point, we were talking about it, and he says it does like six things. The first Alien movie has like six story beats, and it just moves from one to the other, and everything else is like atmosphere and design and how it's directed. And then now, you know, we'll go up to Prometheus because that's the one that everybody's seen. It's like all weird, heady questions and 3D rotations, wide shots. And it's just interesting to see how Ridley
Prometheus
Scott...
Prometheus tries to do a lot of things.
Prometheus does try to do a lot of things, but it's more than six things, which is... it's weird to see Ridley Scott return and be like, no, this is what the franchise was about this whole time. Not atmosphere, not the monster. But these questions.
It's about the search for God. Come on.
Yeah, really. And like Ridley Scott being like, was it Neil Blomkamp who wanted to do an Alien movie, or did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, like, it was Blomkamp.
Yeah, and Ridley Scott's like, no, only me doing Alien forever. I'm like,
I have more questions to answer with
like,
my movies.
Sir Ridley, come on. Sit down, sir, and let someone else have a chance.
I said good day, sir.
I said good day. I will say that, you know, another thing that I'll say about the original Alien movie, and I think we should talk a little bit about Prometheus because, you know, that's Dave's controversial pick, but, you know, a fun thing they did is they did sort of this, not quite the Scream thing, but I think a lot of people went into Alien expecting that Tom Skerritt was the hero, right? And Ripley is sort of this, like, you don't expect this character to become the hero of this film. And I think that's kind of cool. And I really can't, like, advocate enough for these. Like, some of these making of documentaries are even better than the films themselves. I would say a lot of them, actually, of these alien films. So really, if you've got a lot of time to kill, which who does these days? Aren't we all rewatching Twin Peaks? You know.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you know what? I could save everybody some time. So the first four are on sale right now on your iTunes with the iTunes extras that includes what Joanna's talking about. Alien, Aliens, Alien 3 are on YouTube. For Alien versus Predator and AVP Requiem, the CGI or the creature effects company actually has posted like a ton of their like suit tests and stuff that I was watching today, which is basically like those documentaries, because who cares what Paul W.S. Anderson has to say about anything. You really want to see how the creatures are made. And then Prometheus has a movie length documentary about itself that comes on the Blu-ray. That is why I own the Blu-ray.
That sounds about right. Okay, so we should talk about Prometheus, which was like reviled, which is, it's so weird how much it was reviled, because, you know, I think a lot of people had their expectations really high because it's Ridley Scott's return to the franchise. We haven't had a great alien movie, depending on your definition, probably since Aliens. You know, like this is the franchise coming back to its roots. Lindelof is, you know, still not completely the joke that he became for a little while then, before he redeemed himself with The Leftovers. And, you know, so a screenplay by Damon Lindelof, return of Ridley Scott, a really great cast, And, you know, it looks pretty cool. And then it was not, unless you're Eve. You know,
it turns into an alien movie at the end, in its defense.
Yeah, well, for me, before that, it's a creepy robot movie, and like, I love Michael Fassbender in Prometheus. I mean, I love Michael Fassbender full stop, but I love Michael Fassbender in Prometheus, everything he does, from watching Lawrence of Arabia to, like, you know, basically impregnating Amira Pace. Like, it's all so terrible and awful, to being a head in a bag. Like, I just love every single second of him. So that's why I love
Can I
that
say
movie.
Something without spoiling the next movie? I have a prediction to make based on what you just said.
That I will love the next movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know some things, but
There's just a lot of great Fassbender stuff in that movie.
Yeah.
If that's what you're in it for.
That's what I've heard. But, you know, I couldn't get past people doing stupid things, and also just some of the creature work, like what becomes of the... There are too many creatures. Like, really, it's just too complicated with all the different things that are going on. So maybe I won't like Covenant for that reason. But, yeah, so either Neil, let me know what you think, or Dave, defend your life. Like, tell me why Prometheus is the best movie.
So Prometheus is the best movie because in the franchise...
Whoa. Okay. The best non-alien...
Correct.
Aliens movie.
The best non-alien Aliens movie, because in the spirit of what the Alien franchise is now and will be in the future, it's the connecting thread that is going to allow it to pivot to be even more types of franchises than it was before. Sure, it was like... Go ahead.
This is why you liked Ultron, and I can't get behind this reason of yours for liking movies.
Okay, in IMAX 3D, it's one of the most beautifully shot movies I've seen from a technical standpoint. Even when I'm, you know, whether I'm rotating around the ship or inside a, like a womb abortion chamber.
It is a very pretty movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really well designed, considering they didn't want to get to the alien, because I saw it, and instead of walking away with questions like, why did they take off their helmets, or why does Charlize Theron run in a straight line from something that's rolling?
Run serpentine!
Oh, instead, man, I forgot, like, that she was in that movie.
I'm like, the steps of the alien evolutionary process that are laid out presuppose at least another race or several years before we actually get to the alien, because it's all been about the engineers in this black goo. And it's a bold step to take to be like, hey, this monster movie franchise that has, you know, the past movies you've seen in it has been just monster fighting monster brawl franchise, is actually this genetic horror creationism franchise, which I think is, you know, why I could defend Alien Resurrections, because I think Ridley Scott saw it and was like, there's something interesting in that, that, you know, somehow if you follow the loop of genetic fuckery, we give these things a womb that are going to end up having come from a something that we created, like engineering the biology of either us or some other alien species. But like the idea that you could trace the black goo to the squid thing, to the whatever we call the proto xenomorph, I think they call them the Deacon and like behind the scenes thing, just that it implies, instead of being like, because when they announced Prometheus, Ridley Scott's like, this is going to explain the engineer, this is going to explain the plant at the beginning of Alien, and I'm like, prequel, great, this is going to suck. But it wasn't a prequel. It was something completely different that was like, you think you know the answers, it's going to take you six other movies to figure it out, or you just connect the actual things we give you and be okay with the gaps. Which is why if it would have ended after Prometheus, I still think I would have liked Prometheus for choosing not to be a crazy monster movie that is about being a crazy monster movie, but instead injecting new life into the franchise that nuked Colorado and nothing survived except one of the Predator blasters, causing Weyland-Yutani to go into space. I like the Prometheus version much better.
Here's my real question about Prometheus. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, there's more.
Does Idris Elba have that accent?
Oh.
Another person I forgot was in Prometheus.
Yeah, I don't know. Idris Elba was really wasted in Prometheus, except when I thought he was going to, like, romantically get involved with Charlize Theron more. But, you know, wasted potential. Also, there should be crazier monsters in that movie, but, you know, neither here nor there. Apparently, Ridley Scott thought that we were done with the xenomorph and then changed his mind between this and Alien Covenant.
Here's who's in Prometheus. Noomi Rapace, great. Michael Fassbender, great. Charlize Theron, pretty great, except I'm really tired of daddy issues. Idris Elba, confusingly accented. Guy Pearce, confusingly age makeup. Logan Marshall Green, just such a potato person, I can't even tell you. Sean Harris and Rafe Spall, who are the hapless scientists. And then Benedict Wong and Kate Dickey of Game of Thrones fame. So, I don't know why that movie doesn't work, because it should, but I think it has something to do with the, you know, because you've got the landed space station and then that sort of like pyramid thing that they keep going back into. Are there two locations? So that's fairly simple enough. You've got a really good cast of characters, except for Logan Marshall Green, who, like, did he need to be more of an asshole? I don't know. I'm not sure. You've got Michael Fassbender just fast bending it up and being great. I almost think that it's these bigger questions that Ridley Scott's trying to answer, when in fact I just want a creature movie.
Well, bingo. Let me pose this to you, Joanna. Isn't Prometheus just the Firewalk with Me to Twin Peaks?
Is that a compliment?
I mean, I don't know, but the idea that, like, in that movie, I don't know that what I'm looking for in this sort of, like, I don't know, explaining, it's making big promises to the audience about what to expect and then planning to not deliver on it whatsoever. I feel like you kind of are allowed to lapse character sense in that a little bit. I'm not going to say, like, Prometheus is a great movie, like Alien is a great movie, but I do think it's my favorite sequel to Alien because it doesn't feel like it's one thing. Like, I don't know, because Ripley's surrogate family dies at the beginning of Alien 3 and I didn't get to spend more time with them. But each little alien pocket is its own little thing, except for Prometheus, which is instantly like, no, I'm not one little thing. This is not ending. This is shooting off into the universe.
I think we're probably always going to agree to disagree, which is fine because of your fondness for franchise building and my, like, not giving a fuckedness about that. So, and that's okay. I think,
and I wrote about this week, that really is the inflection point, is do you want to know where all this shit came from? Or do you just want to see this shit be terrifying? So, like, that's really where I came down on the post-Prometheus Alien franchise situation is like, hey, do we really need to explain all this stuff? If your answer is yes, or yes. If your answer is I am interested in that, then yes. You will like these movies. If
yes.
Your answer like me is like, no, I kind of wish it was more simple and just scary and random freak of nature-ish like the first movie, then no. But I think Prometheus is fine. Like, it's fine. It's a pretty movie with pretty people.
Prometheus is not as bad as people paint it. But it's,
yeah, I do think that there was, you know, when that came out, and again, it's a media landscape thing. When Prometheus came out, we had this expectation of what alien movies were, and then we had this expectation of what we thought Ridley Scott would make as an alien movie. And it's clear, having seen Prometheus, that Ridley Scott did not start making Prometheus because he wanted to make another alien movie. Like, he decided at the very end, oh, right, fine, we'll put the stupid thing in the movie. But he would have made it with no xenomorph if he, I don't know, he probably would have done it. If he sort of had the will to go through with it and not sort of capitulate, it seemed, to fans. So, because we grafted this expectation of what his next alien movie should, if you're going to revisit the franchise, you got to have this thing. And I feel like he gave into that idea at the end, where he was really trying to make a totally different movie.
That feels like a good place to transition and let go of Joanna after this break. All right. Joanna has gone to the spoiler-free zone. I encourage you, listener, if you do not want to talk about Alien Covenant spoilers, to also jump off this podcast, save it for later, go to the theater, enjoy your craziness, come back, and then we could all talk about it. But
is it safe to say that in space, no one can hear you spoil?
I think everyone could hear you spoil if you're still listening to the podcast. So we're trying to avoid for the averse. But
yeah, don't. We're about to lay it all out there. So yes. Don't.
Neil's seen Alien Covenant. I love spoilers / the Alien franchise. Here's how we're going to go about it. We know from the previews that the Covenant is a colonizing ship that responds to a distress signal that ends up taking them down to a planet where all hell breaks loose. What we otherwise don't know is they meet up with David, who has crash-landed on this planet, which was the engineer's home planet, and has been running experiments that have not only killed off the engineers, but created some crazy life forms that infect our crew before they happen across David, who then has engineered some other things. He is a real dick. So right after Prometheus, I had two possible theories as to how we got to the alien from where we left off in Prometheus. This was before I knew that this movie called Paradise Lost, which eventually become Alien Covenant, would be plotted this way. So I'm going to read these two to you, Neil. Neil, you tell me if either one of these is right.
Okay.
Number one, the engineers are killing off races for reasons that even Prometheus leaves you hanging on, and one or a few of them are piloting a ship full of bioweapon to a planet. They drop the bioweapon on the planet, hoping to kill an insectoid race. Something goes wrong, the pilot gets infected, and as he's returning home to report victory or rally the troops to finish the job, a queen bursts out of his chest as he crash lands on LV-486 and dies. The queen is like, what the fuck, no life forms? So she lays as many eggs as possible, then dies, then the Nostromo arrives. Option number two, the engineers have realized their bioweapon has crazy consequences when turned on themselves, and so one of their experiments goes wrong, and they unleash the first proto-xenomorph with the penis head in Prometheus. Thus begins the search for what to combine with the creation weapon to make the new ultimate weapon. And the space jockey goes to the alien homeworld to collect eggs at some point, that, and those are the ones that end up on LV-486.
There's elements of both of those in Covenant.
Interesting.
But neither of them is spot on.
Okay.
Because neither of those ideas account for David, who is now, according to Covenant, the most important person in the history of the universe. Because he is the sort of tinkerer of the genetic code that creates the xenomorphs as we know it.
Oh, so it's not the space jockeys at all, the engineer. It's entirely David.
So, yeah, how much of this do you want me to spoil for you? Because I could really lay it out there.
No, just lay it out there. I'm okay. Going to see the movie one way or the other.
So David obviously takes off in the ship with... As a head in a bag with the girl with the dragon tattoo, Noomi Rapace.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we learn is that by the time they get to this planet where they are found eventually by the crew of the Covenant, is David shows up and just murders all the engineers with the bioweapon. And then he begins testing. Like, he sets up like his own little lab and he starts perfecting the alien form, the xenomorph form. Like, he starts running different tests to basically change it from the sort of halfy hybrid thing that we see at the end of Prometheus into more of the xenomorph that we see eventually in Alien. So it's all about him. So when Covenant shows up, what we learn very quickly is that David has set a trap for them. And David wants their bodies to do more experiments, because we find out that that's what he used Noomi Rapace for, was to experiment. So she obviously regretted putting him back together with a body,
right,
later, because he performed all kinds of weird experiments. So what it posits, and it opens with the scene between Guy Pearce's Wayland and David talking about creation, and how, you know, David Wayland is saying, like, you're here with me, I am your creator. And David wants to know who is your creator, and he's like, I'll never find out. He's like, but I hope to send you out there to find out. And I think what happens ultimately is David decides that the creation, like, his creator was a flawed model, so like he decides that humanity is flawed. And he can make a better creation out of these alien genes. So his whole goal is, I'm going to create these aliens, and then I guess, spread them around the universe, because I'm a robot. Am I invincible? So, that's where they took it.
Interesting. So he gets off the planet at the end, presumably with this. They have all these embryos and shit, and so now he's just.
Mm-hmm.
So the
Covenant, that's another thing about the Covenant, is the Covenant is a ship with like 2,000 cryo-sleeping colonists on it. So when David finds this out, he's like, interesting. You mean to tell me you have 2,000 warm-ass bodies on that ship? So it's sort of all about him ultimately just trying to further his experiment. And, you know, the movie does its song and dance to make you believe that maybe David is defeated, but you know, is Michael Fassbender ever really defeated?
Maybe I didn't see Assassin's Creed, but not as far as I know. Even Magneto's gonna be back in Dark Phoenix, apparently.
Yeah, but so it turns into this creator, this idea of Wayland was searching for his creator, and he put his creations out into the world. And David was essentially the last one, obviously, to meet Wayland. Because then you have also this other character, Walter, who is also Michael Fassbender. And Walter is a newer model. And Walter is slightly more obedient. He's not as artful. He's not as thoughtful. He's a little more utilitarian than David was. So it's the idea that after Wayland, like, Wayland was putting some poetry in his robots. Hmm. And then after he was gone, so after essentially the Prometheus left, the company was like, you know what? Maybe these guys shouldn't be this smart. Maybe we'll make them to be, you know, more of a tool than a person. But I mean, that obviously there's still elements of Walter that come into play with Catherine Watterson's character, where you can tell that Walter, there's a little bit more to him. You know, he sort of feels kinship and love, and but he's definitely not David, because David is a huge dick.
Huge dick. So wait, he kills all the engineers?
Yeah, I mean, it's this huge mass murder where he basically, they fly back to the engineers' planet, and he just unleashes the toxic black goo, and it just wipes them out all at once. What's weird about it is that it's not like the black goo doesn't like make them turn into aliens. It like, it's almost like one of those what's that, the real thing upon which the Kit Harington movie, oh, Pompeii. Like, you know, there's this, like, the stories of, like, people being frozen.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, shadows being blasted against walls because the explosion was so sudden. It's like that, but they're all, like, just, like, these black figures of, like, dead people. And so it's, like, this weird, and it's a really cool visual, this huge field of, like, these black frozen figures, people running in terror away from what we then find out was the black goo.
Huh. I'm just wondering how, if we haven't gotten to the final alien yet, or do we get to the final alien by in this movie from your perspective?
We're very close, because, you know, even in the trailers you see the black xenomorph character. It's the one that's like whacking on the side of the spaceship. That Danny McBride is flying. So we get very close. None of the full form aliens get off of the planet. Eventually it's just David escapes with his experimental embryos.
Ooh.
So
somehow we're going to have to find at least one existing engineer to be crash landed on the planet from the first alien. But otherwise we could be perilously close to closing the loop.
Yeah. I guess that is something that doesn't quite register. Although, do you know what the planet is in Covenant? It's not the same planet, is it?
LV-486? I don't think the planet in Covenant is LV-486.
Man, now I'm mad that I didn't notice. Because if it is, that would actually make sense. Because what is left behind on that planet is the same engineer ship that Numira Pace and David were flying in. That planet does, by the end of Covenant, have the eggs that we see in Alien. So it's not a complete stretch to say that they might be the same planet, but I don't know. They never really make a big deal of like what planet it is.
Interesting. I mean,
so
it'll be...
That's one question, I guess.
So here's what makes this cool night of Alien Resurrection, right? Is now there's an infinity, like, loop of when human DNA is involved with aliens.
Sure.
Because, like, here it sort of starts coming out of experimentation on human bodies. And then eventually it's going to go back and be given a womb through Ripley and then a skull again. Like, there used to be a skull under the dome in the first movie, but they took that out in the second movie just for technical reasons, because they wanted the aliens to be more physical. They didn't want a plastic dome on top. Mm-hmm. But I always liked the idea that there was like a human skull in there, and now this sort of makes that feel slightly better.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting now that we're sort of parsing through the original, like, where we meet the alien in Alien, and that there was an engineer ship on that planet, and Covenant does very much leave the engineer storyline as we know it dead. Like, the engineers are all dead, their ships are all gone, they're all on this planet, David is, you know, absconds with the Covenant. That's weird. I think that there could be more engineers out there. Maybe they don't just live on one planet, but it's an interesting way to, it's creating an interesting gap, I guess.
So I'm going to send you an interesting image through the chat right now.
Yes.
And I'll link to this in our post as well. This is some Geiger art that made it on the wall of the original engineer's ship. And it's supposed to be the life cycle of the alien. And that looks like the full alien coming out of a human, which it sounds like means we're still on this direction. But it also looks like an engineer attaching it to another engineer.
I mean, it looks like somebody in an engineer suit or two people. I don't know. Where'd the other person go? Because it's the egg with the facehugger in it, and then it's two engineers, and one of them gets attacked by the facehugger, and then the alien comes out of the person.
Right, and then the arch is actually a person, so it looks like the egg initially comes out of a womb in a human.
That's crazy.
So that would be the Noomi Rapace, in it seems, engineer art, at least if we're sticking
essentially,
to this being a thing.
Because what Covenant posits is that David created the egg. So, like, right. There is a scene, and it is hilarious, where David leads Billy Crudup's character down to the basement of his fortress of solitude. And he's like, I want to show you my creation. And we get down there, and it's the eggs from Alien. And the whole audience is like, uh-oh. Starts giggling, like nervous giggling. And David's like, come closer, take a look. And at that point, I burst into laughter because I was like, they're really going to do this. They're really going to have a character encourage another character. And at one point, David's like, it's totally safe, I assure you. And the rest, everyone in the audience is like, that's not true. He's lying. That's horrible. This is going to end badly. Stop it, Billy Crudup. And then, of course, the facehugger comes flying out of the... It's the first time we see the facehugger in either Prometheus or Covenant. And, right?
Yeah.
Or was there one in Prometheus?
No. Well, there was the giant squid thing, but I wouldn't qualify that as a facehugger.
Right. So this is, like, the facehugger. Like, final form, original egg and everything. Looks great. Scary as shit when it finally jumps out, even though you know exactly what's going to happen. And then Billy Crudup is the first person to get a facehugger implant, and ultimately the black alien comes out of him, the black xenomorph. It comes out and it does this weird stretching routine with David. I don't know, it's like calisthenics. There's a lot of weird shit in this movie.
Yeah, I'm interested. So I'm really interested in his laboratory, which I've seen some pictures of from material behind the scenes, but because I need to know where the divide between what the engineers knew the black goo was capable of and what David discovers on his own. So, like, the image I sent you allows for them to have perfected the egg on their own, maybe, and then David is just able to recreate it because he has Shaw on hand, or is able to, you know, sort of perfect his version of it, but still on some sort of technology that he didn't have previously.
Right.
That at least would make more sense to me, but I'm okay with it.
I do feel like there's some, like, additional retconning that has to happen in order for that to work.
Well, the good thing is it sounds like he keeps retconning back towards an acceptable solution, but not so much that he ruins the franchise. So let's hope Alien Covenant takes us somewhere that leads back to Alien, I would hope.
I guess.
Although he has like three movies, he says.
So here's a question that you would probably know more than I would, is that what's the timeline though? So like what year are we in Covenant? 2104. So at what point does the Nostromo show up?
That's a good question. Let's Google fast.
Yeah. So the question is how long does David have after Covenant? LV-426. Great.
Yeah, we might have to go into the actual Alien wiki to figure this one out. 2122.
Okay, so 18 years. That's it.
All right, so he's got to get this going.
So we are now... we have 18 years of, I guess, David continuing to, I mean, because when we leave him in Covenant, he has everything he needs. He has 2,000 bodies, human bodies. He has his scary-ass alien embryos. He has a ship that responds to him because his voice is the same as Walter. And the crew is pretty much all dead. So, I don't know, maybe he floats in space for 18 years, perfecting his thing and start dropping them on planets. I don't... It doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of intrigue left in between here. And like, if they ended it here and we're just like, and then David planted an egg somewhere and Ripley's crew found it, that's fine. Like, that makes total sense. We don't need any more. I just worry that they're going to feel the need to go deeper, which is ultimately my problem with Prometheus and Covenant, is that they go way too, like, we just don't need this much explanation for... I liked Alien when it was just about, like, the randomness of how dangerous the unknown is.
I want it to slam together, like, somebody realizes David's dangerous, somebody takes David on, and what we learn is that David's in the engineer's suit in the first movie. We just never opened it up.
Yeah, it almost feels like that's what they were going for at the end of Prometheus. But then they decided to make another movie.
Right. But it's like, since he could be a head or he could be a presence in like something else, it would not surprise me at all if it still ends up being David, since David is, like you said at the beginning, now the focus of the franchise, which I kind of love. If I like Prometheus for pivoting, I like that at the end of this, it's going to be a franchise about Michael Fassbender trying to create a monster. And that's what we've been watching.
Yeah, because I do think, you know, obviously the first four movies are the story of Ripley. And then I think Prometheus and Covenant are the story of Weyland's legacy, which is David. So Weyland creates David, sends him off to find, or goes off with him to find the creator of humanity. And he ends up essentially creating a monster.
Yeah.
All right. I like it. Hey, if that's what you're into, have I got some news for you.
And that, I think, is going to do it for Alien. Neil, what do we have going next week?
Next week, I am happy to report that our ship, we can stop rowing. We will have returned to the Citadel of Crazy Town, where we will begin recounting the tales of the first six seasons of Game of Thrones. We'll pull out all the scrolls and do some Samwell Tarly, and this whole metaphor is falling apart.
No, I'm literally getting my sword out of storage. Like, I'm not joking. I have a big sword I watch Game of Thrones with that's coming out of storage.
That's not surprising at all.
So cute.
Java does not think so.
That also not surprising. So yes, next week we are doing the Rethrones project, which means we will be talking about season one of Game of Thrones, which is a season that aired before this podcast came into existence. So for the first time ever, we'll get to go through season one together. It's going to be great. I'm going to rewatch it. I'm going to maybe reread it. I don't know. It's getting late in the game and I still haven't done it. Yes, very exciting. We're back to Game of Thrones, and we have begun the march towards season 7.
So
march
now's
sounds,
a good time to...
March sounds so joyless and ominous.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, sort
it's gonna of. Be a long, it's going to be a long binge for us in the next few weeks, that's for sure. But now our watch begins again. And guys, watch along, get your friends to watch along. I don't know how many people just have joined us for off-season tour podcasts, which is great. We love talking about pop culture, but this is what we're really good at. This is what we do. This is what
allegedly
the podcast is about. Well, it's called Storm of Spoilers, a Game of Thrones podcast, whenever you search it. So I swear to God, we're doing it.
This is what we're here for.
This is why no one knows I'm doing an American Gods podcast, because it's like buried in this other podcast, though.
Oh, but you are doing one, and it's great. So people should listen to that, too.
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, Joanna's doing a lot of stuff on the internet. Joanna, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
Oh, you can find me on vanityfair.com, which will be a really fun place in the next week or so. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, or you can listen to me talk about Twin Peaks on the new podcast, Peaks TV.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
You can find me listening to Peaks TV because I need someone to explain Twin Peaks to me because I'm a neophyte. But you can also find me at the newly relaunched filmschoolrejects.com, where I am writing a daily column called Opening Credits, in which I make fun of stuff. It's great. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Rejects. You can follow our show at Storm of Spoilers. Make sure you tweet out to the masses and let them know that our Game of Thrones discussions are coming back. So just in case they skip the entire off season, which, okay. And if you want to email us your thoughts about season one, send them stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. The rest of my podcasts at fightinginthewarroom.com. And by all means, also tweet at me about Twin Peaks, because I don't think I'm going to actually be podcasting about it. And I have all the thoughts. So yeah, let's do this, guys. Back to Westeros. Onward.